and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are beeped, the entertainment is grade A. Now I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, and this time out, I'm not joined by Dad or Luke, and we're not talking about a movie. I actually have a returning guest, Mr. John LeMay. John, welcome.
Hey, Jason, I can't believe it's already been like a year since we talked last.
Yeah, we talked about Kong Unmade, which I know we got a lot of positive feedback from our people on Facebook and the listeners and stuff, because the great part about that is that you, not say exposed, but you brought to light some things that people just didn't know about, kind of things. There's some things that I kind of knew a little bit about, and I learned a lot more from the work you did, through all your digging and research. There's some ideas that seem absolutely insane, like that was actually considered, or, things that are like, man, that'd been really cool, kind of thing. The stuff in there was just, I think, really a lot of food for thought kind of thing. Like, oh, wow, they've been really good. And your mind starts filling in what that movie might have looked like and what, it might have been like, So.
Yeah, it's amazing how some of that stuff sounds like a joke and it turned out to be real. It's just really mind-blowing.
Yeah. So, and the things that sometimes, and I always say this too, you ever see a trailer for a movie and you're like, God, that looks god awful.
But you still want to see it.
Yeah. Well, but I'm thinking, but you look and go, God, that's horrible. And then you think to yourself, what did that beat out?
That's true. Yeah.
who greenlit that instead of that? It's kind of funny. I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary. It's called Never Surrender. It's the documentary about Galaxy Quest.
I want to see it because I like Galaxy Quest, but I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. So, Galaxy Quest, if you think about when it came out, it was by DreamWorks, right, of course, and that's Spielberg and, all them, right, kind of thing. Well, at the same time, DreamWorks was making a little movie that people might have heard of called Gladiator, just a small movie, that actually took up a lot of their time and energy. So when they were doing Galaxy Quest, they kind of got left alone and got to make it on their own. And you hear some of the things that originally, when they were getting attention, what they wanted to have happen, like they wanted Bruce Willis to play Tim Allen's part, they wanted all these different action heroes to play it. And then Kevin Kline was supposed to be in it. And you're like, well, that would have ruined the movie. Like, I mean, I love Kevin Kline. He's very funny in A Fish Called Wanda, let's say, or whatever kind of thing. Right. And I love Bruce Willis, but doesn't really fit that role. And you think of a movie like that really works really well because Tim Allen's there. And it's just funny how they start talking about that. And then when they kind of, the attention kind of went to Gladiator, especially when Oliver Reed passed away and stuff like that. And Gladiator was going to win the Academy Award. They got to make their own little movie that becomes this cult, and it made a good chunk of change when it came out, but it kind of became its own thing. But if there had been all those fingerprints all over it, it might not have ever worked as well. So It's funny how things work. So, but this time out, folks, we're not talking about unmade movies. We're talking about, actually, I have all three of them in my hands here. Dinosaurs of the movies, Giant Apes of the movies, and the newest one, Monster Insects of the movies. And these The ones I have in my hand, I have the soft covers, which look like the series two of Crestwood. So real quick, for those of us who don't remember what Crestwood books are, and depending on your age, depending on how much maybe your library had or did not have them when you were in elementary and middle school, the Crestwood series of books, and you've heard, I think we talked about it on Kong Unmade, because the Kong book looks like a Crestwood book with the orange, right?
Yeah.
And I've mentioned it before. The Crestwood series of monster books was, the first series were orange, and the orange books are like Dracula and Frankenstein and Godzilla and the Wolfman, and they are the monster books from when I and my brother and anyone of our age group were kids, and most libraries had them, actually regular libraries had them too. They were, a lot of kids, their introduction to monsters, not everyone growing up got to literally cut their teeth on King Kong and the Wolfman and Dracula and Frankenstein and Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein and all the Godzilla movies. And it was a lot of kids' gateway into learning about monsters. And those books were series one. And then series two, which are the purple ones, that's like Ghost of Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein's in there. And like there's some kind of odd ones in there too, the Black Cat and stuff like that. They would tell you kind of about the movie. Now, the Godzilla book was more broad, right? The King Kong book was more broad. The Mad Scientist book was very broad, kind of thing. It kind of about who it's covering.
Yeah.
But they were a great way to introduce kids to monsters, and not in a way that was terrifying or scary. It wasn't like, let's scare them all kind of thing. Let's kind of introduce them what's going on. And the one thing about the Universal monsters, especially, and even Godzilla and King Kong and stuff like that as well, but the Universals, when you go back and you look at the Universal monster movies, when you go back and look at Dracula and the Mummy and, the Wolfman, the originals, you see some, the influences, the German Expressionism, you see how things are lit and how makeups are done and so whatever. But those are for a lot of people. Are the idea of when you say Dracula, a lot of people think of Bela Lugosi's Dracula. I mean, it's just the way things go. A lot of people, when you say Frankenstein's monster, they think they're thinking of Boris Karloff. Most likely, they're probably thinking of Glenn Strange because that's what the Don Postmas was based off of. But it's that same square head, green skin kind of thing. There's ideas you fill in your head. And Dad and I talk a lot about the idea that there are certain things. Godzilla and King Kong being two chief among them, that people who have never actually seen, who certainly have never seen all the Godzilla movies, maybe they've seen a little bit of Godzilla. You say Godzilla, they know what they're talking about. You say King Kong, and maybe they've never seen 1933's King Kong, but they know what you're talking about. Dracula, Frankenstein, a Wolfman, like those things that kind of become iconic. And those books were some of the memories that people have from their childhood, especially people in their mid to late 40s to, into their 30s and stuff like that, especially because if you were a child of the late 70s and 80s, there wasn't cable, there wasn't every movie ever on even VHS. I was lucky that my dad was an early adopter of VHS. We had hundreds and hundreds of movies. But I had friends who didn't even have a VCR, who didn't, they saw a movie because it was on TV. They wouldn't see it. Like, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a big promotion they were doing back, I want to say it was 7-Eleven. They were going to show The Creature from Black Lagoon on TV in 3D. And it was all about getting the 3D glasses. And you had to go buy a super big gulp or a big Slurpee or what. And you got the red, and remember the old red and blue, kind of 3D glasses, right?
Yeah.
What I'm talking about, right? And I remember that being a big thing, and people are like, oh, Creature from Black Lagoon's a great movie. They're like, oh, I love my friends. I never seen it. I don't really care. I'm like, no, this is a really good one. This is a late Universal. This suit is amazing. This is this. And they're like, how do you know this? And, at the time, it was not, now, you kind of can be the whatever. If you're into monsters, you're into whatever. It's kind of your thing. But back in the day, if you were into monsters, you're like, you like monster movies? You like this? I'm like, yeah, that's what I like. This is what I know about. So the nice part is the hardcovers of your dinosaurs, giant apes, and monster insects, The hardcovers are the orange that match the Crestwood Series 1, and the purple matches the Series 2. And the funny part, and that's the softcover, the funny part is, in my collections, I actually have a complete Crestwood collection, all of Series 1 and Series 2. My dad spent a year, at least a year, on eBay and on foreign eBay and shopping on bookstores that are not, you know, anywhere, like, you know, in German bookstores. So he's in these, like, huge German bookstores online, and, like, he's trying to contact these people and whatever to track down every single one. And I got that year for Christmas, I got this big heavy box. And I'm like, what model? Because I build models, obviously. What model is in here? And I'm like, then it was the books. It's a complete set, which is kind of nuts. But some of the purples, and now the purples all came in hardcover. The problem is some of the purples, their soft covers are faded and beat up and whatever, because it just was, the soft cover back in the day in a library, it kind of gets beat on, you know what I'm saying? Not the library binding and stuff. I actually have a few of the soft covers for the, what they considered them, quote unquote, soft covers. They still were much thicker of the oranges, because my daughter has a few of her own, because I managed to accumulate some over the years kind of cheap, you know, pick it up for $5-6 here. And she's read a lot of them too. But it's always amazing to me when you look at something that's, oh, good gravy. I mean, some of them are got to be, you know, 37, you know, almost, you know, 38 years old, and you get a copy and you're like, wow. Was this one even red? You know, there's no stains, there's no tears, there's no folds. And like, you know, and it has that smell, which I think is, I think kind of is lost nowadays. Cause you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, that book smell, that library smell.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I'm rambling. I can ramble all day about crap. Those kind of, I love books. I mean, that's hard to, it's hard to people think about, like, oh, I read everything digitally, and I love reading digitally as well, but there's something to be said about holding an old book, you know, in your hands. So, so why don't you tell us about why you decided to write, you know, these three, at least, I mean, hoping it's just the first three in a series, but hopefully why we picked these three is what you were kind of decided to go with.
Sure. So, I mean, yeah, like you pointed out, Kong Unmade was modeled after the Crestwood House look. And then I found a new printer that will actually print hardbacks. And so I actually did the text is the same, but I did Kong Unmade in hardback. And again, no new text in there. It's not a new book. It's just a hardback edition, same cover. And I looked at it, and it turned out so nice, and it just kind of got my wheels to turning that what if I could just actually replicate the old Crestwood spirit? So I got out one of the Crestwood books that I had, and I measured it, and I looked at the printer's specifications for what they could do, and I found not the exact size, but like the closest size that I could find. And I set up the hardcover, and I was absolutely abhorred at the price. I do want to point this out, because people are going to look at that book and say, $17 for that, that's crazy. I do just want to explain that those hardbacks are so expensive to print for independent publishers. You have to rack up the price that high. I mean, I really think it should sell for anywhere between $9 to $12, but for me to make a $1 royalty on this hardback, I had to make it about $17. So just for anybody who out there who thinks I really jacked up the prices to make a profit, that's not true. It really was just basically a fun little project, a labor of love. I don't really make much on these. They were literally just for fun. And that's also, though, why I did the soft cover, is I realized, gosh, that's a lot to pay for a little book like that. So I did also do the soft cover, and to differentiate it, I gave it kind of the purple theme like we were talking about, so it'd be different. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of continue the spirit of those books. And I just thought, I didn't want to be too specific with characters, because characters, you know, are owned by studios and you can get in trouble. But as far as just a broad genre, I got to thinking about it, and I don't believe in Thorne ever did just a dinosaurs book, did he?
No.
Jason did. Nope. Okay, that's what I was thinking. So I just thought, well, what about just generic genres? And giant apes and dinosaurs and insects were the three that came to mind right away. And I did the apes book first, and I liked it. And so then I went on to dinosaurs. And I actually titled this one, I believe there's probably already a book out there called Dinosaurs of the Movie. So this one is specifically titled Dinosauruses of the Movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just,
It is titled that. I read it wrong. I mean, it is Dinosauruses.
Yeah, and some people think that it's like a typo, and it's, I don't even know that that is a real word, but we all know the movie Dinosaurus, so I thought, you know, you could have Dinosaurus as plural, but yeah, they're just like the old Crestwoods, about the same page count, about 44 pages, lots of pictures, and very simplistic text, so it's what I would call a novelty item. It's not like Kong Unmade, where you're going to learn a lot. It's more just something to kind of take you back to your childhood, and, you know, you won't learn anything. I can almost guarantee you. You've probably seen every book in the movie. It's just, again, a nice little picture book.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, is when we got them, after they sent me one and then didn't send me the other and then sent me the other kind of days later, and during quarantine, you know, things were shipping at such weird, you know, times, mm-hmm. and whatever. Like, you know, you'd order something and literally, like, they'd say, okay, it's going to take 6 weeks to get you. And it would get to me the next day. And then they'd say, okay, this is going to be to you in 2 days. And I still am waiting through things, you know, kind of thing. Like plastic baby bottles for my daughter's dolls. It's been like 4 months. Like, I'm like, yeah. They ain't coming. They're like, oh no, they're coming. I'm like, I literally could have walked yeah. to you and walked back. But one of the nice part is when the giant ape book came, Haley, my daughter, immediately is like, oh, I want to look at this deck. Cause she absolutely loves the old Crestwoods. You know, I mean, I've mentioned it before. My daughter has a 6 foot tall Frankenstein's head. It actually fits it's designed to go on your door at Halloween, but it's Boris Karloff from Bride of Frankenstein. It's done up kind of like, it's a photo, but it's kind of like they've softened the edges and whatever, but it's designed to, you know, cover your entire door. She uses it as a poster in her room. I mean, she loves Frankenstein and the Bride and the whole nine, but she also loves King Kong. And so she's like, I want to look at this. She starts going through and she goes, Dad, she goes, and there's King Kong in here. Like, but what are these other ones? And I'm like, well, honey, cause again, she's young. So she's still, you know, to her, she doesn't know necessarily the depth of, like, you know, all the other ape movies that might be there. So she got to, the movie called Ape, right? Kind of thing. And the poster says Super Kong, which is why one of my favorite absolute, I mean, I've tried to track down actual posters of it. They get a little pricey because of where they're from, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But she saw it. She goes, Dad, what's Super Kong? That looks good. I'm like, oh, you want to see that? So I pulled it up on YouTube. She goes, yeah. Oh, no, Dad, no, I'm good. You know,
kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it's funny, though, because, like, to her, she appreciates good movie posters, and she appreciates that kind of thing. Maybe that most, you know, 9 and 10-year-olds wouldn't care about. But to her, she's like, that looks so good, Dad. That makes that movie look so good. And then, you know, she kind of sees it. She's like, oh, okay. But, you know, kind of thing. She goes, because it wasn't King Kong. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't even De Laurentiis' King Kong. It wasn't, you know, kind of thing. Because it's kind of like, okay. And she's like, I don't know about this, Dad. Because I just showed her, like, a little small clip of it kind of thing. Because, you know, you sit down and start watching the whole thing. Because one day I was watching either The Amazing Peking Man or Mighty Peking Man, excuse me, yes, or Queen Kong, one or the other. I don't remember which one. And she's like, Dad, what are you watching? And I'm like, oh, no, I'll turn it off. We don't need to watch this right now. She goes, okay, is this for your – and I was like, honey, I don't – because as what happens, as you know this, as you watch tons and tons of movies, some movies kind of blur together. And I'm like, have I seen this? I'm like, this looks really familiar. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, yes, it's this. And then, you know, you fill it in. But she was super excited about that. And then the dinosaur book came and she's like, oh, look at on the cover. Cause the Brontosaurus on the cover is from The Lost World, obviously. And she's like, oh, she starts going through. And now this is some of the stuff she knows. Cause she's seen, 1 million BC. She's seen, you know, she's seen 1 million years BC. Obviously she knows the Retosaurus. She knows, you know, Gorgo. She knows Reptilicus. And even if she only knows Reptilicus from, you know, being on Misty, she's like, that's Reptilicus. That's this. And I'm like, you know, it's awesome. She looked at this and she read them. She read both of those. Now the insect book just arrived the other day. She didn't get a chance to read it yet, but she sat down and she read it. And to her, she's like, this is interesting, Dad. This is great. So as myself, when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, as we were racing to the library to try to take these out, when our teacher said, you may take one out 1 week and then the next week you can take something else out. And there was an actual waiting list that was months long for the one Godzilla book we had, because God forbid they got two of those, right? she read these and she's like, this is so cool. Why doesn't our library have books like this? And I was like, well, that's a really good question, Haley. because I think what's kind of now happened is that, you know, they're kind of, my daughter's been kind of forced to read what, you know, the school wants them to read. Mm-hmm. And when she gets to pick a book, she picked Crestwood House books. She picked Bride of Frankenstein. She picked whatever. And that for her independent reading, that's what she picked. And she has had, thankfully, the last couple years, you know, when they've had to pick their own independent reading book, teachers who are very supportive of her being an independent, you know, individual and picking what she liked. Her friends were all reading, you know, let's say Judy Blume books, which I read as a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tales of Fourth Grade, nothing super fudge, you know, whatever, right? And yeah. She's like, I don't really want to read that. I want to read, and we read The Black Cat, you know, kind of thing. And so she's writing about this. And what happens in the book? Well, this man gets dissed, and he gets tortured, and this happens. And I'm like, oh, God, okay. Like, you know, but she's interested in that stuff. Because why? Because on Svengoolie, they showed The Raven, and they showed The Black Cat, and they showed, yeah. You know, so she's seen those movies. To her, it's interesting. Boris Karloff is a star. She knows he's no longer with us, but he's a movie star. Bela Lugosi's a movie star. Lon Chaney Jr. is a movie star. Those are the same people I thought were movie stars when I was a kid. Now, she knows who The Rock is, and she knows who Kevin Hart, and she knows, you know, those things. But to her, they're movie stars. They're in movies, Dad. They're on DVDs we own. They're on Blu-rays we own. And they're in these books. And I think some of that's lost nowadays. I think kind of because kids kind of – the idea of sitting down to read for a lot of kids is like punishment.
Yeah. Know,
which is a shame, but.
It makes it worse when you force them to read, though, and they can't mm-hmm. pick their own, you know, I mean, some things, sure, you got to make them read, but as far as reading for pleasure, though, I don't think you should force certain books on them, because then they'll never read, but.
Yeah, and, you know, the funny thing is, I mean, obviously, you do a ton of reading, obviously, in research and stuff like that kind of thing, and there's sometimes you're maybe digging through something, and you dug through all this to get a little bit, you know, just a little piece out of it, and if you know, do a lot of work to get a little piece. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And I said, what I've said to my daughter is that sometimes we have to read things we don't want to read because it helps us do something else better. You know, trying to explain that to her. And I tell her all the time, I said, Dad, you know, as I tell her, I said, Daddy, you know, you think Daddy can do all math in the world forever and it'd be good because, you know, third and fourth grade and fifth grade math is super easy. I mean, like if I can't add money up at this point in my life, we've got a problem, right? You know what I'm saying? But I said to her, I said, Haley, if I had to teach calculus, I haven't done calculus in a number of years. I'd have to go back and reread calculus and reread how to do these things and study. And she's like, but Dad, that sounds kind of boring. I said, well, it is. It said it kind of is boring. I mean, there are some people who truly love calculus. I am not one of those people. Like, I'm an algebraist by nature. But I mean, I don't read math books. You know, just for fun, but sometimes you need to do it to do research, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things I was trying to explain to her, because she was asking me, I was reading a book on sabermetrics. And, you know, I know it's kind of a little far afield, but the sabermetrics the one I was reading was trying to show sabermetrics for other sports besides baseball. And these are got insane formulas in them. And she's like, Daddy, this looks crazy. And I'm like, well, Daddy kind of likes math and Daddy really likes football. So Daddy's just trying to come up with other, I was just finishing up. I used to coach football and stuff too. And I was looking for any advantage I could have going against anybody else. Like I could say to the kids, all right, look, I'm looking at our data. We need to do X, Y, and Z and do it all mathematically because I was never blessed with children who were big or fast or a lot of them. You know, I had very few kids. Most were slow, you know, wasn't greatest thing in the world, but we won a lot of games because we were speed. We were smarter than it. We outthought the other team. We did things better. We worked at things. And I said, that's what you have to do sometimes. It's research. But I think that sometimes is lost. We had when kids have to do reports, my daughter had to do a report on Benjamin Franklin. And I'm looking at the other children's reports because you can kind of, they're sharing stuff. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay. She's like, what's the matter? Nothing. I was like, you do your report. If you want Daddy to help you, because I always have to go in and kind of help her with the, you know, clean up. Good gravy. She is she is the queen of pronouns. you know, he. You got to give more than just he. you know, and contraction. She wants to contract everything. You know what I'm talking about, right? Kind of like it doesn't always make good reading when you're writing a paper about things. And I said, I said, we want to kind of give information about Mr. Franklin. We want to talk about what he did, you know, and what he contributed. It's not just that, like, hey, he invented bifocals. That's cool. What else? Where does it go? And we started digging deeper, and the school's resources they gave us, these three little web pages you could go to, we more than exhausted what they could do. So I said, let's go beyond that. Let's push. Let's go find more stuff, and let's dig deeper into Ben Franklin's life. Because it says, like, you know, kind of, and you start doing that. And she got wrapped up in doing the research and she spent hours working on this to make a 5 or 6 slide presentation for class. But she enjoyed the process, and I think that's sometimes lost. And that's one of the nice things. And again, to get to segue back, because I, you know, I went to segue school here. These books are perfect for that. If a kid is interested in giant monsters, you know, dinosaurs especially, and you know, King Kong, when we have Godzilla versus King Kong now coming out next year, right? These books might be a great way to kind of introduce them to, like, hey, there's movies out there about this stuff, and kind of get a conversation going. Because once their brain starts engaging, you know, in this, they start playing, and you know, or they start, you know, writing their own story, or they start drawing pictures. Literally, my daughter's favorite game when we were younger was she had a Godzilla from the legendary Godzilla, which breathed fire, and she had all her Disney princesses, and Godzilla would come and fight the Disney princesses.
That's awesome.
And at the end, literally every time, Elsa would freeze Godzilla's heart and kill him, or, you know, not because, you know, she's like, well, Godzilla doesn't really die, Dad. You know, in the movies, he can't really die. And I'm like, yes, uh-huh. I know. She goes, you know, as if I have never seen, let alone have an entire shelf of every Godzilla movie ever made, you know, kind of thing. But I think that's an interesting way for kids sometimes to get into things. And we look at, you know, the B movies here, and sometimes we cover B movies on this podcast that are R. And, you know, like, I'm not going to tell people, hey, show your kids, you know, this hard R movie. Like, you know, show your kids Hardware. They need to see that movie. Now, I mean, Hardware is a good movie, but it's, and I mean, Richard Stanley, so there's no punches pulled, but that's certainly not for most kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But these are great because there's nothing in them that would be, you know, there's obviously clearly nothing, language wise, you know, would be, you know, inappropriate for kids to see. There's no nudity. There's no, you know, anything overt that would be like, oh, how can you show that to a child? And in fact, when the monster insect one came, Haley, I opened the thing. She goes, she looks at the front. She goes, is that tarantula on the front? Like, and I was like, I don't know, Hale, you took the book before I could see it. And she starts going through and then she's like, Dad, there's a whole section on them. And Them is one of my favorite movies maybe of all time. I mean, it's literally in my, you know, we were talking about this, when we covered Them. It's one of the, to me, it's one of the best. It's definitely one of the best science fiction movies ever made. It's a great horror movie from what it, you know, what it accomplishes with sound and stuff like that. But to her, Them, and where we live in the summertime, especially where my parents' house is, at least, we hear the crickets in the swamps, right? Well, the sound of the ants is that sound.
Oh yeah.
So my daughter, when we go outside, we leave my parents, and she goes, "Dad, listen, it's them." I said, "No, Haley, it's crickets." She goes, "I know, but wouldn't it be cool?" I said, do you really want to fight a 50-foot tall, you know, or a 25-foot long ant right now? She goes, no, but it'd be so cool. You know? Yeah. So, so the newest one, the monster insects in the movies, which I said just right now, I started going through today. There is, some of the pictures you have in here that you've gathered here are just absolute classics. Like I said, the movie Them, I love the behind-the-scenes picture of them where it's showing that, you know, with the ant setting it up and the little, you know, board where it tells you, you know, which scene it is and whatever. And going through here, you know, tarantula, beginning of the end, you know, where you can't drop an atom bomb on Chicago, you know, with Peter Graves. Just great stuff. And I was happy to see the Black Scorpion, even though he does look a little zany himself in the, you know, close-up of his face, you know, kind of thing. Just an underrated movie that I think a lot of people – may have only ever seen on the Misty, not even realizing that it's Willis O'Brien, you know, just doing his thing. which is funny, and I think you and I may have spoken about this before, that Black Scorpion and the Giant Claw were filmed at the exact same time on sound stages, basically near each other in Mexico.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
No, you probably talked about it with somebody else, but no, okay. I didn't know if
you and I had ever mentioned that. So Willis O'Brien, of course, did the Black Scorpion, and they tried to get for the Giant Claw. They were trying to get Ray Harryhausen, and they were gonna. Harryhausen's like, well, I got to see him coming in. He's gonna do this, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna get Ray Harryhausen to do the Giant Claw. Now, I know you've seen the Giant Claw.
Oh yeah,
and you've seen the giant marionette puppet that is the Giant Claw.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a sketch that Harryhausen did that he called the Jupiterian. Are you familiar with that?
I remember the name. I can't remember exactly what it looks like.
So it's kind of like a dinosaur body with wings and a tail coming down. And it was a concept he had for a movie where they go to Jupiter, and it's the creature they fight on the planet. There was rumors, and again, I can't prove this, but it's just I've seen this other in a couple places, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily true, but because Mr. Harryhausen's no longer with us to confirm it, but that was the concept he had said. If I had done that movie, I would have used this idea, and I would not made it look exactly the same, made it more look birdish, but used that, and it would have been stop motion.
Wow.
And I'm like, what could that movie have been?
So, yeah.
You know, because we only have so many Harryhausen movies. You know, it's not like there's infinite Harryhausen movies out there. We only have so many. That would have been something. Now, at that time, I don't remember if it was, were they making, I think they were making 20 Million Miles to Earth at that time. It's around that time when they were making those. And let's be honest, 20 Million Miles to Earth, you know, he used that as an excuse because originally they'd want to set it in Chicago. And he said, this wouldn't make sense in Chicago. We should set it somewhere near, above Venice or in Italy. Okay, let's go to Rome. Yeah, let's go to Rome, because he wanted to go to Rome. So he literally kind of like, that doesn't make sense to set it here. Let's set it here. So they went there. And, you know, we got, of course, 20 Million Miles to Earth with the Emir, which is one of the most famous, iconic characters he ever made. And, you know, all the reasons why he made the legs a certain way. And so they couldn't accuse it being a guy in a suit and all this stuff with that. But yeah, it's just things like that, like those kind of what if and, you know, kind of things of what could it have been. But I was happy to see, just to be honest, just real quick, when I was going through again, the giant leeches, you know, kind of thing, just another classic. And then there's Empire of the Ants, but one of my favorite movies that, and my wife, her aversion to spiders is probably more than her aversion to creepy dolls. Like, she really doesn't like creepy dolls. Now, if you had a movie with creepy dolls and spiders, I don't think she'd even like consider that.
Yeah.
Kingdom of the Spiders with William Shatner. Just one of the, I remember seeing it as a kid on like USA, like Up All Night or something like that, right? You know, kind of one of those things, and just being like, wow, that's really good, you know, kind of thing. The effectiveness of the, you know, the actual spiders and the, you know, the insanity that they would, you know, entomb the entire town and all this stuff. Like, I was so happy to see that in there too, because it wasn't just giant monsters, you know, kind of thing. It's talking about the other insects in movies as well, you know, because, you know, it doesn't have to be a giant to be, you know, terrifying, because I'll tell you right now, you put a couple hundred tarantulas in a room with you, you know, kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So, but, yeah, like I said, I think these are great, folks. You can definitely check them out on Amazon. That's where I got mine through there. Like I said, the hardcovers, you were saying, you know, and I said that too, when I was looking at it. Because I said, oh, these hardcovers, man, these got to be costing them a fortune to make. Because you just don't make hardcover books like that anymore. You know?
Mm-mm, no.
It's a lost art. Even these books, even these softcovers, this is not the way books, softcover books come anymore. Like, the feel of them, like, they have that kind of, it feels different. It's not different in a bad way, folks. Different in a good way. It feels like it's old school nostalgia. Like, these are going to go with my Crestwoods. Like, this is what they belong. They're just like, it's like Crestwood Series 3, you know, kind of thing. Like, if they ever made a Series 3, this is what I feel like Series 3 should have been, you know? So,
Oh, thank you. Cause like I said, that was my goal. So I feel good. I feel like I accomplished something there.
Yeah. And I hope people check them out. And, like I said, they're great fun. if you are saying, well, Jay, my kids are in their 20s and stuff. Well, to be honest, my dad is, you know, I mean, for listeners of the show, my dad's kind of a big kid a lot of times. He is the one who's like, hey, Haley, want to check this out? They're watching. He started showing her, and I don't know if you've ever seen it. You know who Sid Caesar is, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I do.
So the show of shows back in the day where it was Carl Reiner's, one of the writers, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen. Like, it was like the who's who of the comedy writers through like the late 60s into the 70s. That's what they became. Well, the TV show, Sid Caesar was the main star of it. And Imogene Coca and there's other people. I mean, Carl Reiner's on there and stuff like that. So that set came. And my parents are watching. And he's like, he's showing Haley stuff from like the 50s and early 60s. There's comedy. And they're laughing their butts off. Because, I mean, it's hysterically funny, but it's like it doesn't, just because it's old doesn't mean it has to be, you know, it's no good anymore, you know, kind of thing. So yeah. My daughter, I mean, my dad, and obviously, you know, I'm here, even myself as well, she's learning that, you know, things, just because they're old doesn't mean they don't have value. And just because it's, you know, different doesn't mean it doesn't have value. And there's, you know, you can like things and, you know, as you see fit and stuff. And I think the nice part about these books, to her, she looks at this as like, these are her Crestwoods. This is now what they're doing for me. And literally she's asked, why can't they have these in the library? And so I asked if we can donate books to the library to put them on the shelves. And there's like, freaking rules, man. In the 80s,
yeah, like, I'm sure.
Yes. You know, in the 80s, they'd be like, please. Now there's like rules about like, you know, well, does it meet this educational criteria? I'm like, oh, like, you know, just, you know, they become a pain where I sit sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because to me, I would gladly buy hardcover versions of all three of them if they were willing to put them into the libraries at my daughter's school, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, just because she would check them out, you know, like, oh, I'm getting this. And everything's like, well, you get there. And like, it just becomes word of mouth. I mean, I wish I was kidding, to be honest with you, John, is that there were near fist fights in a library. We were all went to Catholic school. So it's shirt, tie, sweater, right? Almost having brawls over who is taking out the Godzilla book.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. Now, the upside was my brother and I were both in the, you know, in school together at the same time. He's a couple years younger than me. So we had two shots at getting it.
Yeah.
Compared to me, we only had one. But I mean, my dad was always like, well, if you're going to have to get one, the King Kong book's really good. He's such a huge King Kong mark, you know, kind of thing. The Kong book's always good. And I'm like, and so the problem is Luke and I would both get King Kong. I'm like, oh, dude, don't get the same book as me.
Yeah.
You know, you start bringing them home. So, but yeah, folks, they are great. They are, they're a lot of fun. Haley and I will, I mean, like I said, she read them on her own, but what she'll do is sometimes, especially during the summer when it gets like real warm at night and stuff like that, where you're going to get the air, you know, you're sitting in the air conditioning, instead of just trying and watching another movie, it's like, you know, Dad, you want to read these with me? And she'll pull out one of her books. Like, she'll pull out, like, her she has read Bride of Frankenstein. I cannot tell you how many times. Like, kind of thing. And Ghost of Frankenstein, right? She's like, she has the hardcover Crestwoods. And I said, can we read these together? And we'll read it. That's what we'll do. We'll just read one of those. She likes when I read them aloud sometimes because I give everyone voices, which is always fun. You know, like Igor and, like, things like that, which is one of the reasons why I think I've read more my daughter could read Roald Dahl, but she likes it more when I read them aloud because, like, the witches need voices, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, and I'm like, and I have to remember what voice I do for who, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It gets hard the next night when you're like, oh, we didn't finish it. I don't remember the voice. But so, you know, these are great folks. And like we mentioned before, last time you were on, we talked about Kong Unmade. So, you know, I know you have a couple of, what was it, the Lost Tosusaku, did I say that right?
You're close. Tokusatsu is the Japanese word for special effects.
Yes, that you have the lost films of that. You had the Godzilla ones, right? It was not called the Godzilla Lost Film. It's
yeah, I'm very picky with legality, so it's called the Big Book of Japanese Giant Monster Movies, the Lost Films.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I didn't remember, but I know did you just re-release that one with more material added?
Yes, I did. Thanks for bringing that up. It's not a minor revision. It's a huge revision. A second edition. It's even like a physically a bigger book with bigger dimensions because there was so much information that if I had kept the same trim size, it would have been like 1,000 pages. So I made it a 7x10 now, so it's a much bigger book.
Okay, well, then I knew they had said second edition. I didn't know how much revision was in there, but that sounds great. Because I can honestly tell you, folks, as reading through those things, and I am not the, you know, I am not as deep in this as my brother would be about it, because he's super deep into like Ultraman and like all that stuff. Like, that's not me. I know my Godzilla, I like my Gamera. I'm okay with, you know, giant monster stuff. But reading those, I got so much from the Lost films, you know, kind of thing. So, to me, the Lost film, and don't get me wrong, the Heisei and Showa, you did those two compendiums of like the reviews of the movies from those eras, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then now that just came, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, did you now reissue the, at least the second one?
I did, yeah. Those are, I guess you could consider those third editions on just basic guidebooks. So not really a lot of revisions, just a few new entries. I've even told people who love my books, don't buy those, because I'll probably do a combined edition within a year or two from now. Whenever I actually can see Godzilla vs. Kong, I'll put out a nice combined one. So I'm nice like that. I like to warn people, like, don't buy it, because there'll be another one before you know it. So in case of that one.
Yeah, I can honestly say is that, because I have, which one? I forgot. I'm trying to remember, because I have some on my Kindle. And I had some that I bought in, like, the, you know, the paperback versions, kind of stuff like that. And I'm trying to remember which ones I have of which. Some I have both. Some I have, like, the Kindle version and the paperback version. Because I was like, man, I'm not going to take my paperback. Like, I was reading them on my Kindle. I'm like, I can just bring my Kindle to school with me. And not have to bring not have to worry about the book getting, like, you know, chewed up in my backpack or something like that. You know what I'm saying? But those being any of your movie reviews, I always find them very insightful. You know, it's okay, so do you remember, I don't know if you ever did this, my dad is a big Leonard Maltin's, you know, review book, you know, the movie guidebook right by the side of the, he always had it next to his chair.
Yeah, I used to like those. I used to read those when I was younger.
Yeah. Well, so did I. In fact, my brother has, you know, he has his right next to his chair too. I'm like, and literally in a day and age when you have more technology in your phone than they did to put, you know, men on the moon, like, and you're still reaching for the Leonard Maltin book, real quickly look it up kind of thing. Those, he would give you the quick, like, kind of real quick synopsis and whatever. I feel that when I'm reading one of your synopsis, you give me, you know, much more about what's going on in the film and some depth in there without making it complete and absolute overkill. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes you read a review, you're like, oh my God, like, I don't need to know about every scene.
No,
It's like reading Tolkien. Like, you know, I don't need 12 pages about the grass blowing, buddy. Come on, let's just get to the next fight.
Yeah.
Let's get to the orcs, you know, kind of thing, right? And for Lord of the Rings fan out there who are like, how dare you say that? I'm sorry, you know, kind of thing, but it's true. You can skim out some of that, right?
Yeah.
I feel that's what your reviews give us. So if you're into that stuff, folks, and you've picked up the other ones in the past, and again, they're interesting as all get out. I mean, it's if you don't, again, if you know the movies, you know, you're kind of like, oh, and it's always nice too, because you're, opinion about certain movies and my opinion about certain movies and my brother, they don't always match, you know, kind of thing. So it's always nice to also read somebody else who doesn't always share necessarily exactly my feeling about a movie. You know, there might be a movie you love and you're like, talk about, like, I'm like, oh, I guess so. And you kind of rethink it. Not that, like, oh, he's wrong, I have to fight with you about it. It's like, oh, okay, I didn't see it that way. And there's give and take, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's sometimes lost, you know, because on the internet, no one ever fights with anybody, ever.
Yeah.
As you can all hear my eyes audibly roll.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I agree with everything you just said, and that's why, like, I would even encourage you to write a guidebook, and I'd love to read it for the same reasons. I want to see why you like a movie that I don't like, or vice versa. You know, it's part of fandom. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, as much as, to be honest with you, I have, you know, people always say, well, Jay, because, I mean, and again, I have done many more episodes of Bots, Bugs, and Babes. I've been on my brother's podcast about, you know, Earth Destruction Directive. The wrestling podcast, if, like, as much as I might know about horror movies and giant monster movies and all that, like, my wrestling knowledge is insane, and I never get to use it anywhere, you know, kind of thing. Everyone's like, you should write this. I'm like, you can't just write a wrestling book about, like, start reviewing matches. That's insane. Like, at least with, like, if I'm going to review, let's say I was going to write reviews of the Fast and Furious movies. There's a limited number, even if they keep making them, of Fast and Furious movies. There's not a limited number of wrestling matches that have ever occurred ever in the world. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
kind of nuts out there. But I agree with you. I mean, that's what I try to use this show for. I try to put things out there. People have accused my dad and I sometimes of being too hard on certain movies. And I'm like, like, it's our opinion. You don't have to agree with us. Like, on this show, it is not unheard of for Cleopatra to take one on the chin literally every time we can get a shot to take at that movie. Because I don't like Cleopatra. My dad is like, well, the first half's really good. And the second half of the movie's like, ugh, you know? But 2001 A Space Odyssey, some people literally, it's like their favorite movie of all time. Eh, I don't really love it. You know, kind of thing. Like, and it's funny because there's that. And when you come to like, well, why? And I can tell you why. I think that's important. That discussion is important. So, but I mean, I'm not trying to get super deep and philosophical because, you know, it's what happens sometimes when you start talking movies and, you know, fandoms and stuff like that. But so, like I said, one of the things about the books about the unmade movies, the unmade either, you know, whether they were, you know, unmade King Kong movies or an unmade Godzilla movie or the, you know, the different things like that. To me, I find those super interesting, and they really kind of make me start thinking about, one, did someone really have this idea? You know, like, you know, kind of thing. What was it? Is it King Kong versus Batman? Is that one of the ones from the King Kong?
It was Godzilla versus Batman.
Godzilla versus Batman. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was King Kong versus Tarzan then, wasn't it?
Yeah, like that was a real one. Yep.
Yeah, yes. That was, yes. Okay. Yeah. See? Because both of those sound insane. Right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yet, when you read about it, it's like, huh, okay, I don't think this would have worked well, but I could have seen this, you know? The thing is, do you have any other, you know, kind of books like that coming out?
I do. This is probably the closest thing that I can call a sequel to Kong Unmade. I just did Jaws Unmade, as in the shark movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically got... Yeah, I call it Jaws Unmade, but really it's Jaws sequels and ripoffs that didn't get made. And it also, like Kong Unmade did, it talks about a lot of those ripoffs, like Orca and Piranha. And I actually don't like to call those movies ripoffs. I think Orca and Piranha are pretty original in their own right. But just things about the development of those movies. And you know how I am. I hang pretty loose with the term lost film. But, you know, just really obscure trivia you probably didn't know about how those movies almost turned out, the sequels that didn't get made. And again, same as Kong Unmade, but with Jaws.
And I'll be honest with you folks, here on the Two True Freaks Network, there are a few things that are, you know, the holy cows, so to speak, you know what I'm saying? Like the sacred cows, not holy cow, the sacred cow, you know, kind of thing. Star Wars, Star Trek, right, kind of thing like that. And let's be honest, there's so many unmade Star Wars, you know, whatever, and Star Trek things that you could write volumes on that stuff. But Jaws is up there with Planet of the Apes for, like, the most, like, you know, just below Star Trek and Star Wars as, like, the things that on this network people love. So a book about this possible unmade sequels, ripoffs, the movies that were inspired by, the movies that followed in. I mean, I covered Piranha, oh, good gravy, on like the very beginning of this show, way, way back when it first started out. I mean, I love Piranha. The movie Piranha is, I absolutely adore that movie. Being just like, I mean, it is so Roger Corman, it's unbelievable. And yet at the same time, is so Joe Dante, it's unbelievable, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's that movie just stands differently. And a movie like Orca, which I think gets a bad rap sometimes as being a Jaws ripoff, is literally ripped off by Jaws 4.
Oh, I made that same point. Like, as you read the book, you'll see. Okay. So we think alike. I mean, I'm not the only one who drew that parallel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I always thought that because we were watching it. Again, Jaws 4, for those of you who are thinking back, like, which one's Jaws 4? So that's the one where the shark gets revenge and then follows them all the way to the Caribbean, right, or the Bahamas or something, like, because somehow a shark could do that.
Jason, did you know that the shark in that movie, according to the novel, is the baby shark that was birthed in Jaws 2? Did you know that the shark in Jaws 2 was the wife of the shark in Jaws 1? and she had a little baby, and he survived, and he became the shark in Jaws 4. That's in the Jaws Revenge novelization. I'm not making it up.
Oh, my God. I did. Okay. I did not know that. Now, to be honest, I have not read Jaws Unmade yet, literally, but, like, wow, you blew my mind, dude. That's crazy. And that's
it blew my mind when I read it. Yeah. And also, so I guess they named the shark in Jaws the Revenge Vengeance, and his daughter, another crazy, I don't even know how they connected these dots. His daughter is the shark in Jaws 3. I don't know. It's crazy. But it's like a real thing within the novels that they tie all this together. So
yeah, now I got to track down Jaws 4, the novelization, because there's going to be, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure you have a good number of those of novelizations of movies from back in the day. Like, I'm assuming you've read a number of them.
I only have the novelization for Jaws 2. I didn't buy the one for 4 yet, but I know what's in it.
Oh, okay.
But I don't have a lot of them though.
Oh no, I'm talking just in general. You didn't kind of like
No, not really.
No? Huh. Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, like my brother scored me a copy of Predator 1 year. He had at a used bookstore for 25 cents, like looks brand new, the novel, and like raw deal, like things like that, like the movie novel, the tie-in novel, and I'm like, you know, which is because it, okay, if you buy the tie-in novel for The Exorcist was a book before the movie, okay, that's not a big thing, right? But like the ones like that, that's like just tie in, like I read the book for Gladiator before I saw Gladiator. I know, oh, that's not true. I started reading the book for Gladiator, then I saw the movie, then I finished reading the book. And there's stuff in the novelization of Gladiator from the shooting script, which is all in the deleted scenes. And I'm like, oh, man, that would have made way more sense. And that would have tied this together, right? So to me, I always try to, when I can, I grab the novelizations. Now, some people have said, like, well, this one's exactly like the movie, or this is, you know, there's not much difference. But some of them are drastically different. And I can honestly tell you right now, Jaws 4 is just a mess of a movie at times. Let's forget the shark jumping out of the water and roaring, or Michael Caine hitting the water and being absolutely dry. What I'm saying is, you know, like, so to me, to have kind of meat in the book, that would be interesting. I have to look into it. Again, where I am, used bookstores are like few and far between. I think they don't really exist, period, anymore. My brother down south, there's a lot of used bookstores and stuff they hit because he goes there a lot of times looking for. He managed to score some of the, like, the DuckTales, they have a special name for them because they're like they're the trade paperbacks, but they're like the gold editions and whatever. And people will just sell them back. And he's like, they're a buck a piece, and these are like, you know, $70-$80, you know, editions. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll buy them, and he loves that stuff, right? He's always kind of looking for things like that. But I'll put him on the lookout for certain, because I would actually read that. As much as I do not love Jaws 4 as a movie, I would read the novelization just to get the cool stuff out of it. So, but
you should. It is on Amazon. There's several of them that are used. If you can't find it, they're on there. So,
Well, it's one of those things. I know back in the day, my brother had got a copy before we were allowed to watch slasher movies. We could watch. We're watching Carpenter's The Thing. We saw Reanimator, like, but we're not allowed to watch slasher movies because those are garbage, according to my dad. Right. Luke had a copy. He had scored a copy of Halloween, the tie-in, which is different than the actual movie. Hey, not, oh my God, different, but still different enough. And it was kind of funny because that was what we knew as Halloween. We read the thing before we ever saw the movie, you know? So it kind of it's kind of changes a little bit. Like when you read what's supposed to be, like, okay. And you watch the movie, like, wait, that's different. I feel like maybe it's when kids see Harry Potter. And they're like, that's not the way the book goes, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
folks, I tell you right now, Jaws Unmade sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to be, I mean, I got a copy on the Kindle, actually, like, just recently got it because I had just saw it come up. And I was like, I got to get this. I'm going to start reading that next because I just finished up, you know, the book I was reading, and I got to start this one. And, it's going to be so cool. I love lost stuff. It makes you think, you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes you kind of like, oh, wow, that's cool. Or, man, thank God that didn't happen. You know?
Yeah.
John, I want to say thank you very much for coming on today and, you know, talking about these books. Folks, listen, you know, I can't put over enough how much I love this. I love John's writing style. I love the way it's kind of when you okay. So I'm going to reference something, and you probably know what I'm going to say. McFarlane books, not Todd McFarlane, but McFarlane books. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Right. Those books that are $50 and $60 and $70 for a book. And they're like, this is a critical essay on this. And it's like, and you start reading it, you're like, oh boy, this is dry. Right? This is boring. Yeah. Your books are not. And I got to admit that. And I do truly appreciate you. You put in awesome pictures and posters and stills and stuff to illustrate what's going on. And it does help kind of go along. You know, you're reading through there, you're like, oh, this is awesome. And Conga Maid had some great pictures in it kind of thing. As you're reading through, you know, just we could find about things. And I can honestly tell you is that helps a lot sometimes when you're reading through and you're like, oh, this sounds interesting. Oh, here's a production still of whatever. And, you know, and you're like, oh, that's cool. Like, or, hey, they got this far in this, or this was, you know, kind of thing or whatever. It just, it's interesting. It's engaging. And I find your writing style to be enjoyable for me, because if I'm spending time reading something that I don't have to do for work or school, you know, or research kind of thing, you know, I'm not doing that old thing. I want to enjoy it. And if I'm not enjoying it, I put it down. You know what I'm saying? And your books, every one I've read cover to cover, you know, kind of thing. I recommend them. I made Dad read them. Dad read Kong Unmade. He loved it too.
And that's, oh, thank you.
And that's a Kong, you know, like, you know, purist. My dad's like, you know, like we went to Skull Island. He's like, we'll see if this Skull Island's any good. You know, kind of, he loves Skull Island.
Yeah.
But he's like, we'll see. It looks like it should be good, but you know, kind of thing. So. But I just want to say thank you very much for coming on today. It was a pleasure having you. We're going to have you back.
Thank you, Jason. I look forward to it.
I promise. Okay. It won't take a year this time. and we'll get you back on, and we'll talk some more books, and we'll get you on to do movie reviews too, because that should be, you know, I know we teased that, and we'll get there, and we'll definitely do that as well. So
I would love to. Maybe with Jaws the Revenge. Who knows?
Oh, you know. we could. I'll be honest with you. I don't own it. That's hard. As I'm literally looking at thousands of Blu-rays right in front of me, let alone thinking of the thousands of DVDs that are downstairs, I am almost 100% sure I do not own Jaws 4, unless there was a box set that came out back in the day, but I'm betting it's a no. So I will have to, we'll see. We'll talk. We'll figure it out. But I'm saying it's kind of crazy, right? To think like, yeah. You know, like, oh, I don't have that movie. And I have movies that literally no one's ever seen. You know, kind of thing. People are like, you have that? I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, kind of thing. So, but like I said, thank you very much for coming on. Folks, if you have any feedback that you want me to pass on to John, you send it right into, you know, Bots, Bugs, and Babes. And, you know, I'll pass it along. And you know what? If we get some feedback, there might be a reason to come on and discuss the feedback we get from people, you know, kind of thing. You know, at times I've been accused of forgetting the feedback and stuff, but sometimes we get feedback and Dad and I start rolling on an episode and we're like, oh no, I forgot it. Cause I do forget, you know, I'm old. It happens. So, but anything, if you have feedback for John, hey, maybe you have the books. Maybe you picked up Kong Unmade when we first talked about, it. Maybe you're going to pick up, you know, the monster insects, the dinosauruses and the giant apes. Hey, if you pick these up and you're like, hey, my kids love these. Hey, I love these. Hey, these take me back. Let's hear it, guys. We love hearing it. The other thing too, and I'm going to be honest with you, this always helps. If you do purchase it and you read it, go on Amazon, right? And put a review in, right? I mean, I've done that for you before. I've read a book, I'm like, this book's great. I don't review every book I read. But if I'm reading a book and I enjoy it, I make sure I put it up there because I want people to find things I enjoy. If you read any of John's books, even the Spaghetti Western book or the one about the UFOs and the cowboys or all the different stuff that you write, anything, if you do a favor and leave them feedback on there. I don't know where else you would leave feedback. You know, is there, am I missing a place to leave feedback or
no? Amazon is perfect. Thank you.
So definitely do that, folks. So like I said, so John, it was good having you. We'll have you back on. So folks, as we say around here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?